evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. President Kiir instructs police officials to work with the Regional Protection Force.
You are not to fight the RPF or the forces of the enemies. You have to cooperate with them.
And cholera cases are on the rise in Juba.
The second week of September, there were 40 suspected cases of cholera again. There's been reported cases of acute watery diarrhea throughout the country, mostly in the central and west.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. For the first time, President Salva Kiir is asking the South Sudan police to cooperate with the UN-backed 4,000-strong Regional Protection Force. The president says he wants to build capacity of the police force through vigorous training in many areas so officers know how to keep law and order in the capital, Juba. Waki Simon Mudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Addressing the South Sudan Police Service in Juba today, President Kiir instructed top police officials to ensure that the force is professional and want police not to antagonize UN peacekeepers operating in the country.
Your role as security forces is not to fight these forces. You are not to fight the RPF or the forces of the enemies. You have to cooperate with them.
Last month, South Sudanese officials and UNMISS personnel engaged in a standoff in Juba following the deployment of Regional Protection Forces, or RPF, near Juba International Airport. Information Minister Michael Makuei told the reporters last month that peacekeepers should not be stationed near the airport. Makuei was one of three individuals sanctioned earlier this month by the U.S. government, accused for antagonizing United Nations personnel and blocking humanitarian aid workers. In a more conciliatory tone, President Kiir advised the police to be on friendly terms with the UN peacekeepers.
You need really to be vigilant. They are foreigners. Hata lobuka friends vitana, they are foreigners. You must show them the best part of this country. They are here on temporary basis. So let us take this time with them. We don't fight them, nor do we fight again with Riek Machar.
The deployment of the RPF was mandated by UN Security Council Resolution 2304 last year. The force is acting under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter. Chapter 7 allows UN peacekeepers to use force against the threats of instability in South Sudan. So far, 600 RPF from Rwanda, Bangladesh, and Nepalese have been deployed to Juba. Kiir also told the senior police officers to implement reforms within the force to fight crime, corruption, and maintain law and order, acknowledging that some senior South Sudanese police officers are guilty of corruption.
The issue of the reforms. The reforms are a must, they must be done. And then the reorganization of the forces is also a must. But it will happen when you raise the capacity of the organized forces in training.
South Sudan Interior Minister Michael Sanjek insists the security situation in Juba has improved, but admits some organized forces have become criminals in Juba town. Early last week, seven armed men suspected of being members of the South Sudan Security were arrested in Gudele neighborhood in connection with a murder case and two nighttime robberies. Sanjek says some government forces have also been threatening security along the Juba Nimle Road.
I want to tell to everyone, anyone found involved in these kind of crimes, his case will never be easy.
Sanjek pleaded with the president to sign the pension, migration, and civil registration bills once it is ratified by parliament. He says the new laws will help police address the issue of retiring officers who are not fit to be in the service. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The French medical organization, MSF, says 40 new cases of cholera have been recorded in Juba in the last 2 weeks. MSF is working with South Sudan's Ministry of Health to vaccinate around 200,000 residents of Juba to prevent the spread of the killer disease. Tito Justin visited one of MSF's cholera vaccination centers in Juba and reports for VOA.
Children, women and men line up to be vaccinated at the cholera vaccination center in Juba's Cor William neighborhood. The area is one of the hot spots near the River Nile for cholera. At least 4 people have died from the disease in Cor William. Alex Lomoro Emmanuel came with his 3 children to receive the cholera vaccine. Speaking Arabic, he says he knows neighbors who have died from the disease.
It's a deadly disease that kills. If you start to vomit or have acute diarrhea, report immediately. Don't leave. I have come with my children so that they can be vaccinated to prevent them from the disease. At home, no one was infected with cholera, but my neighbors suffered, and 2 of them died of cholera.
Peter Apuok Malis was also vaccinated. He says he too has seen people die from the disease. Speaking Arabic, Peter says this is the second time he is receiving the cholera vaccine.
That time when they vaccinated us, there were a few people infected by cholera. I believe the vaccine I received today, me and those who received the vaccine will be free from cholera because we got the medicine for the disease.
Eliza Nyibol is a resident of Cor William, where 10 cases and 4 deaths were reported last month. Speaking Arabic, Nyibol says she survived because she receives her cholera vaccination every year.
People with children, men, and everybody should come and get the cholera vaccine because our place is very dirty, our water, even the streets are dirty. This brings cholera, but if you are vaccinated like I was vaccinated, you are safe.
Poor hygiene and drinking untreated water can cause cholera. Cholera symptoms include diarrhea and, in some cases, vomiting. Cholera can kill a person within hours if not treated. Juba has been hit with cholera for the past several years. Health officials in Juba say about 300 people have died of cholera in South Sudan so far this year, and more than 16,000 cases of the disease have been recorded in 2017. The French medical organization, MSF, says it is targeting around 2,000 residents of Juba town for the cholera vaccination to prevent the spread of the disease in the capital. Ante Wint is MSF's deputy medical coordinator in Juba.
In Juba County, the second week of September, there were 40 suspected cases of cholera again. There's been reported cases of acute watery diarrhea throughout the country, mostly in the central and west. But specifically for known areas of cholera transmission, it's Juba County, it's Budi, and it's Tonj East right now.
The cholera vaccination campaign started last week in Juba and will continue until next week. The vaccine is safe, free, and oral, according to Wind. It lasts for 3 to 5 years once a person is given 2 doses. Tito Justin for VOA News in Juba.
Women activists in Yei River State are calling for sex education to be included in South Sudan's school curriculum. The activists say parents are not doing enough to teach reproductive health at home, resulting in a high rate of early marriages and school dropouts among girls. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei Town.
Hawa Adams, the leader of Yei Women Association, says her organization has documented high rates of early marriages due to lack of information on sex education. Adams is asking the government to introduce sex education in the primary and secondary schools syllabus.
When you look on ground, most children, more especially girls and boys that are growing, they are totally green about what is called sex. So we need them to at least be aware concerning the sex education in schools, even at home, so that the children cannot mess up by getting into marriage early.
Mary Boka Solomon, head of the Yei Mothers Union under the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says children in Yei schools who have reached age 18 have not yet been taught sex education.
We don't have sex education in the schools. Let them know about their bodies. how they can control their nature, and also let them be informed about the future. Let the government also know it, and let it be also included in the curriculum.
Hayat Clara, another women's rights activist, says early marriages and school dropouts are big problems due to the economic crisis in Ye River State. Hayat says sex education can reduce early marriages among teenagers.
You find girls dropping, boys having children at the age of 12, 13, 15. My message is that the sex education has to come back, because when you try to tell a child the truth, you find that the child will really know from the childhood up to when the child has grown up. But when we will keep on hiding, don't telling them the truth, they will not know and they will keep on doing things.
Sima is a senior for candidate at Emmanuel Model Secondary School. He says his parents have not talked to him about sex education. He supports the proposal to include sex education in the school syllabus nationwide.
The fact remains, our parents fail to give us the information on sex education. That's why there is a need, the Ministry of Education, to have a plan by printing the syllabus in order for us, the students of the school, to get to know exactly what are the benefits of teaching the students on sex education. Secondly, our parents should be given awareness on the benefits of giving advices to the children at home on sex education.
Christine, a senior two student, agrees. Christine says she wants to complete her studies.
We are finding also difficult in here that most of us are not being educated on how sexual education is supposed to be done. So I'm urging the government outside there that if they will listen to our voices, at least they should introduce such books so that they will teach us on how sexual education is supposed to be and how we are supposed to control ourselves as being students in Yale.
Winnie Grace, a teacher at Kingi Primary School, is also concerned about the lack of sex education for area children. Grace says she will teach it if the Ministry of Education approves it.
We don't have a book specifically for sex education in full, but if syllabus can be provided to every school and it can be legally known by the country that this thing is supposed to be taught, that is where we, the teachers of primary school or secondary school, we can have that heart of telling these children.
Omba Peter, a Ye parent of a boy and a girl, says cultural norms prevent parents from teaching sex education at home. Peter says sex education should only be taught in school.
We as parents are afraid that if we tell our children to have healthy relationships or protected sex, in fact, we always think that now they will actually increase, you know, their behavior by going for frequent sex with other people. If I now call my daughter or my son to talk about sex education, most probably he will be shy.
Victoria Nasra is the Director General for Gender and Sexual Development in Ye River State. She says the state and its partners are working to address the challenge.
We are going to sit down as the Ministry of Education and our implementing partners to come out with some syllabus or handout for the teachers to teach the pupils or the learners on this sex education. Teaching sex, of course, is a collective responsibility of the teachers, the parents, the government, even the implementing partners.
Children in developing nations are taught lessons in the last year of primary school about the changes of puberty, as well as the basics on conception, pregnancy, birth, and healthy adult relationships. In some countries, it starts as early as age 4, with sex education made compulsory in all secondary schools. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Fried Martin in Yei.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What did the diaspora think about how the conflict affects young people? Find out when we come back.
South Sudanese in the diaspora have mixed reactions about what is happening in their country. This week, South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza engages the diaspora in a spirited discussion about what South Sudanese should do to bring peace in their country.
Unity is possible when we stop the hate.
What are we not doing to bring peace to our country?
The voices of the diaspora on ending the conflict in South Sudan. This week on South Sudan in Focus.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
have you ever bribed someone to get something?
Why or why not?
No, I have not bribed someone before. And the reason is, I didn't want to push somebody to the wall to get something. The best thing is you have to do the right thing. So I have never bribed somebody in terms of getting something from the person, no.
Have I given bribe? Yes. Why did I give bribe? Because the system is wrong. Do I want to give bribe? No. Would I be able to get what I wanted if I didn't give him that money? No, I wouldn't have. So in a sense, I believe that bribery and corruption is not necessarily a personal desire. It's a systemic problem.
Personally, I don't think I've ever, but someone has done it for me, yeah, to get something I wanted. But personally, I have never bribed someone to get something.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese in the diaspora say many years of conflict in South Sudan has affected the mindset of generations of South Sudanese. Community leaders and activists in the diaspora say for a culture of peace to prevail in South Sudan, the people must change their attitude about their communities, learn to forgive and coexist with one another. John Tanza holds a roundtable discussion with the diaspora, who insist that South Sudanese must open a new page in the search for a durable peace.
My name is William Pei. I am executive director of the Nahalin Institute for Peace and Development. We are operating in Phoenix, Arizona. We do community platforms, more of forums that talk about peace.
Our people are very nice people. They will welcome you in any environment. But the political elites have created a situation that have also boiled down to communities. If you look at the land grab, if you look at the intercommunal conflict, the cattle rustling, I don't think the issues that they are now talking about or fighting about are not new. They are their old issues from previous leadership mismanagement. If I'm the president, I would have resigned so that I can create a new spirit, so that a new person take over to create. But hanging on to power, by all means, you're furthering the divide. Even if you and I love each other, these people will continue to divide us.
John, yes. Maybe let me make a little bit of comment here.
Yeah,
I agree with my brother.
Yes, Jonku, tell us.
100%.
Yeah.
Because this issue actually go back to 90s and 83, and even 70s before we were born, you know, it started with Abdelaziz. The nepotism, the favoritism, they have not been addressed since we signed a comprehensive peace agreement and then we gained independence. What I was expecting as an ordinary citizen from SPLM party at that time is bring all South Sudanese together, say, hey, this is the starting point. We were fighting for justice, liberty, prosperity. Now we got the country. How are we about to achieve the justice? How are we about to achieve the liberty? How are we about to achieve the prosperity? But it didn't happen, actually, because of, you know, after Dr. John Grant died, they took the vision and threw it away. The leadership is punishing the citizens of the country for what had happened in the past. And actually, they have forgotten that there were values that we were fighting for. Now the North and the international community, the other, you know, people are laughing. These people, they were united, you know, and they have one enemy. They were fighting for one goal. And now what? They got what they needed, and they failed to do. If we are not acknowledging the mistakes that have been made in the past, we are not going to achieve that unity.
Anyikur, do you agree with the gentleman that the past is to blame for our current situation?
These are the start of the past.
I'm asking Anyikur, are you there?
The past. You know?
Yes.
I'm asking you, do you agree with Jonkur that our past is to blame for the mistakes of today?
We're still holding our past, and that's one of the things we, as a South Sudanese, we don't let it go. Because if you have a wound and you keep put a bandage on top of it, you don't actually try to clean it up and fix the heal to heal. That's exactly what's going on right now, because each of our leadership, all of them, you know, they're holding grudges. You know, seeing the 72, 93, 91, and those are the same people causing problems, causing the pain for the people of South Sudan today. We need to bring a new generation. We have everything, but the problem is with our leadership, and we need to change that. And number two, involve women. We think different.
You're saying that the old is hunting the present, and you are zeroing down to the issue of leadership, like Anyikur is saying. We need to change the leadership. We need to change the old guard to go home. But there are people who are saying even the youth are divided along their ethnic lines. They are thinking like their elders. What is your reaction? So you can jump in. Just let me know who is speaking.
William Pei coming in. If there's anything we have learned in 2013, is that communities form groups. Instead of a unified code name, South Sudanese Council of Elders or something. So we have to start promoting the new identity, which is South Sudan. Previously, we did not have any issue during the 1955, although there were leadership wrangling, but there was a unity that kept us together when we were fighting for our rights. Even during the split, there was that identity. So the nepotism in 72, that did not really create more suffering and death and exodus of our people.
Nelson, there's this issue of leadership. What is your take on it?
I think I agree with the views from my colleagues that the whole guards have really poisoned the minds of, basically also because previously we didn't have a government.
Is your mind poisoned? I'm asking you, Nelson.
No, I'm not saying my mind is poisoned. Mm-hmm. I have my own principle. I will not stand with somebody who has committed a crime. If you don't know what is wrong and what is right, and you stand with somebody who has done wrong to others, then something is wrong with you.
I would make a point here as well, John. South Sudan youth, you know, there is literacy is too high.
You mean illiteracy?
Because illiteracy, that's what I meant here. If people, you know, are not educated, they are likely to be poisoned with those who have hidden agendas. And that's what happened exactly.
How do we prevent the youth from being brainwashed?
Well, preventing youth from brainwashing, that's why I agree with what my sister Nyankol said here. There is a need, you know, for involvement of young generation, because this old generation, you know, they are the ones that poisoning the youth, actually. They don't look ahead 50 years, 100 years from right now, but the future.
Four people have agreed that there is a need for young generation to come in. The question is, how do the young generation come in? Let's listen to our sister.
Can I put?
Yes, go ahead. Go ahead, Ayinkor.
This is the problem, because we have issue of generalization. We don't know how to differentiate between this is the government and this is the tribe. This is another issue. And number two, we diaspora, they don't like us. Nobody likes us to be part of the, you know, the whole thing. But they forgot, and I will have to say this out loud, we were part of the struggle.
South Sudanese community leaders and activists talking about how the nearly four-year-long conflict affects generations of South Sudanese. Tune in tomorrow for a discussion on the role of the international community in seeking peace in South Sudan with my colleague John Tanza and the diaspora. In a scathing report, the UN Human Rights Council, a senior UN official, accuses the Democratic Republic of Congo of turning a blind eye to systematic and gross violations of human rights by its security forces. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report describes a justice system that shows no independence and allows impunity to flourish, leading to further violence against the people of Democratic Republic of Congo. In her presentation to the Council, UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Kate Gilmore, criticized the government of President Joseph Kabila for failing to live up to an agreement to pave the way for presidential elections this year and a peaceful transfer of power. Instead of showing greater respect for human rights and freedom of expression, she says the government has become more repressive.
What followed was a general ban on the activities of the opposition and on the activities of civil society. What followed was continued targeting of political opponents, of human rights defenders, and of journalists. Relentless targeting.
Gilmore says insecurity has increased across the country. She says violence has erupted in North and South Kivu and Tanganyika and in the southern provinces of the Kasai region on a scale not seen for many years.
As a consequence of the country's conflicts, there are scattered across the Democratic Republic of Congo a staggering 3.8 million internally displaced persons, the highest number in all of Africa.
Earlier this year, the UN's call for an international investigation into widespread human rights violations, including 42 mass graves in the Kasai region, was rejected by the DRC. In what appears to be a turnabout, the DRC's Minister of Human Rights, Marie-Ange Mushobekwa, told the Council her government would welcome investigations in the Kasai region by the international team of experts appointed by the Council. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayen. For the first time, President Salva Kiir has instructed South Sudanese police to cooperate with the 4,000-strong regional protection force that's deployed in Juba. The president says he wants to build capacity of the police force with extensive training so that officers respect and enforce the rule of law. Mr. Kiir instructed police officials in Juba today to professionalize the force and warned police not to antagonize UN peacekeepers trying to help the millions of displaced people in South Sudan. Last month, South Sudanese officials and UNMISS personnel engaged in a standoff after regional protection forces were deployed near the Juba International Airport. Last month, there was that standoff, and President Kiir now struck a more conciliatory tone when he told police to be on friendly terms with peacekeepers and not to engage the rebels that are fighting in and around parts of the country. The deployment of the RPF was mandated by UN Security Council Resolution No. 2304 last year. The force is acting under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter. The French medical organization MSF says 40 new cases of cholera have been recorded in Juba in the last 2 weeks alone. MSF is working with South Sudan's Ministry of Health to vaccinate an estimated 200,000 residents of Juba town to prevent the spread of the disease. Children, women, and men lined up to be vaccinated at the cholera vaccination center in Juba's Cor William neighborhood today. The area is one of the hotspots near the River Nile. At least four people have died from the disease in Cor William alone. Peter Apek Malish was also vaccinated. He says he, too, has seen people die from the disease. Eliezer Niobel, a resident of Cor William, where 10 cases were reported last month, says she survived because she receives her cholera vaccination every year. Poor hygiene and drinking untreated water can cause cholera. Cholera symptoms include diarrhea and, in some cases, vomiting. Cholera can kill a person within hours if not treated. Juba has been hit hard with cholera for the past several years. And finally, women activists in Yei River State are calling for sex education to be included in South Sudan's school curriculum. The activists say parents are not doing enough to teach reproductive health at home, resulting in a high rate of early marriages and school dropouts, especially among girls. Hawa Adams, the leader of the Yei Women Association, says her group has documented high rates of early marriages due in large part, she says, to the lack of information on sex education. She says the government should introduce sex education in the primary and secondary school syllabus. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Junub Sudan by Addison Rabmomo.
Hakuma kabasu junubin be kalam bita huria be kalam bita freedom fini haya uman sibunas gimutu bejan uman gisibunas rijale jeran uman madernas bigeni sawa uman madernas bigeni akhwan uman madernas bili musawa e ya hakuma tashunu e hakuma tamunu Mainu Messas, Bizulumunas, Mabuano so Hagiga Bespicatulunas, the Hakuma Tajunu, the Hakuma Tamunu, Mainu Messas, Bizulumunas, Mabuano so Hagiga Bespicatulunas, Junubin and Atoman Fata. Dema zaman bita kaba satani, wala zaman bita siya satani, anina bigata bani.
We've been listening to Addison Rabmomo with the song Junub Sudan. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can reach us online at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Mainu Messas.